Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. Mark Levonier, your host for This Hour of Crime, later on from The Whistler from 1951. But first, the FBI in Peace and War with a story retirement plan. A CBS broadcast from September 21st, 1958.
The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story in a moment. But first,
how'd you like to own a sunset? Or a sow bug? Or a star? In a way, you do. When you notice them closely and well. It's amazing the number of things we really own. Yet because they're always there, well, we just don't pay too much attention. I'll tell you something else we own. And we'd sure better never let it go. A famous 19th century scholar, Zechariah Chaffee Jr., said it pretty well. You'll find it quoted in important books, right alongside the word of people like Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, people like that. Chaffee said, "The Bill of Rights belongs to us, and not merely to persons who hold unpopular views. It may be involved by them at the moment, but it protects us, too. If we let down the bars to make it easier for secret police to get such persons, then the bars will be down if they ever want to get us. Hence, we benefit directly ourselves when we insist on the maintenance of free speech. Well, it's a fact. To have liberty ourselves, we've got to extend the same right to the other fellow, no matter how much he disagrees with us, no matter how loudly he talks. That's what our forefathers had in mind when they drew up the First Amendment in our Bill of Rights. They insisted on freedom of speech so we might attain the wisest sort of government. Communities not filled with spies and suspicion. You know, it's nice to know you own the right to speak your mind. It's guaranteed in the First Amendment. It's one of our freedoms.
And now, tonight's story on the FBI in Peace and War, Retirement Plan.
Okay, listen to this, Harry. Have you ever thought about a retirement plan that earns money while you do nothing? That's right. You do absolutely nothing except collect money each and every week from your own vending machines. We install and service the machines. You take in the money. Write the post office box. Harry?
Uh-huh?
Harry, I don't think I've got your undivided attention.
What?
Harry, what's the matter with you lately?
Well, nothing's the matter, Sam.
Well, you just sit in a hotel room moping all the time.
Oh, I'm not moping.
Maybe you need a tonic, something to strengthen your blood. Yeah, look at my suitcase. There's a fifth of bourbon.
I'm all right, Sam. Go ahead. Read the ad.
I just read it.
Okay. I like it. Put it in both the local papers.
Harry, you worry me. Maybe we ought to take a vacation after this job, huh?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, a couple of weeks in New York, play the horses, maybe look up some old friends.
I'd like that, but not New York, Sam, huh? Someplace where it's quiet.
Quiet?
Yeah. A farm or something like that. Or a little bungalow in a small town.
Harry, I think you ought to see a doctor, definitely.
For what?
For a checkup. Maybe it's your liver or something.
I got a perfectly good liver.
How do you know? Have you got spots in front of your eyes?
No, I haven't got spots in front of my eyes.
What, just because you can't see them? Listen, you remember cockeyed fishes.
Well, there's nothing wrong, Sam. Now get those ads in print so we can line up the suckers.
One of the most effective swindles practiced on elderly people is the so-called retirement plan. This racket has many forms, all based on a money-for-no-work setup. The sucker reads an ad in his local paper. All he has to do is buy a few vending machines, and he has a business that will take care of him in his old age. Of course, he later finds that there is a slight down payment of $3,000 to $5,000. And even later, he finds that he never gets the machines or sees his money. When the victim first reads the advertisement, it looks like a pretty good idea.
Doesn't it, Hattie?
Yes, it does, dear.
Of course, I'd only start with a couple of machines at first, service them on Sunday. Then I'd take on a couple more with the profit from those, and then...
What about the store, Albert?
Oh, I'd still keep my job until I had enough machines. Then you know what I'd do, Hattie?
Why?
One day I'd take off my apron right in the middle of the Saturday morning rush.
Oh, Albert.
Right in the middle of waiting on that fussy old Mrs. Carter. She'd be saying, and I'll have a pound of butter, Albert, and 2 quarts of milk. Come on tonight. And then while she's talking, I'd take off my apron and say, get it yourself, Mrs. Carter. I'm through.
You wouldn't do that, Albert.
Oh, wouldn't I? Then I'd go into that sourpuss Griscom and I'd say, I've worked in this store for 23 years, Mr. Griscom, and in all that time, I've only had 3 raises.
He'd fire you, Albert.
Well, of course he would, but what would I care? I'd say, you can take your groceries, Mr. Griscom, and...
Albert, where would we get the money to buy these machines?
Well, here. Can't you read the ad? Small down payment. I could borrow money on this house, couldn't I? Or we could go...
No, Albert, not the savings bonds. We couldn't sell those.
Well, all right, Eddie. Hey, but just read this ad. All they want is a token payment to show good faith. The machines pay for themselves in 90 days. Yes, that's all right here.
All right, Albert.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to look into it, would it?
No, I guess not.
They could send their representative and I could talk to him, couldn't I? Any harm in that?
No, of course not.
Well, all right, that's what I'll do. I'll talk to their representative. After I get myself set up in business... You know what I might even do, Hattie?
What, Albert?
I might even get us a car. And when I do, I'll just park it right smack in front of the store where they got that sign, this space reserved for grocery dirt.
You'd get a ticket.
No, I wouldn't. When you're an independent businessman, people don't push you around so easy. Clip the ad, Hattie, and tell them we can see their representative anytime they're ready.
Two of the most skillful practitioners of the retirement plan were Harry Benton and Sam Warner. Harry was the one who made the first call on the victim. Sam followed later in a truck with the model vending machine. Our bureau had posted many warnings about Harry and Sam, and the Better Business Organization publicized the swindle. But there were always plenty of fresh suckers to rise to the bait.
And then, if I had 5 machines, I could be practically independent. Well, couldn't I, Mr. Benton?
Huh?
I said...
Yes, of course. Completely your own boss. Absolutely 100% independent. Say, Mr. Wilkins, is it always so nice and quiet around here?
Sure. It's like a tomb most of the time.
Oh. Gee, you can almost hear the mosquitoes, can't you?
Those aren't mosquitoes. They're tree toads.
Tree toads? Really?
Yeah, they're a nuisance. Say, supposing I could work up to 6 machines, Mr. Benton.
Do they hop?
Who hop?
Those tree toads.
I don't know. I never saw one. Oh, and here's the iced tea. Put it right here on the table, Hattie.
Do you like lemon in your tea, Mr. Benton?
Oh, either way, Mrs. Wilkins.
Is it too cool out here, Albert? We could have our tea inside.
No. It's delightful, Mrs. Wilkins. I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Well, porch is nice when the weather gets hot, but these spring nights...
Oh, if I had a porch like this, I'd never come in the house.
If I had 7 machines, I'd get an apartment in town. That's what I'd do.
Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't have 7 machines, Mr. Wilkins. It only takes 10 minutes to service each machine, and you do that only once a week. So for 70 minutes, that is 1 hour and 10 minutes a week, you... What color are they?
What?
Tree toads.
I don't know.
They're brownish gray.
Is that so? Brownish? For just 1 hour and 10 minutes a week, you can be on your way to financial independence.
How much do the machines cost, Mr. Benton?
Happy.
A very sensible question, Mrs. Wilkins. Each machine costs $2,100.
All right. $2,000?
For each one?
Well, that's right, but all the investor pays is 1/3 down, and the rest comes out of the cash receipts.
Oh, only a third.
But 1/3 of 2,000?
Hattie, why don't you let Mr. Benton and me discuss this? When can I see the model machine, Mr. Benton?
Our sales truck will be in town on Saturday.
Could you possibly make it Sunday?
My husband clerks in Griscom's
General... I'm associated with Griscom's General Store. I'm pretty busy on Saturday.
I'll be here on Sunday, Mr. Wilkins.
Oh, that'll be just fine. Hattie?
Yes, dear?
For the iced tea, Annie. That's what you brought it out for, isn't it?
Although Benton and Warner took all the proper precautions to steer clear of the law, it was necessary in the practice of their swindle to take ads in the local papers. One of these ads was spotted by the Better Business Bureau representative while traveling through a small town in Ohio. Presently, Agent Stevens and I went to this town to talk with the owner of the local paper.
So he handed me the ad, and I read it over, and I looked him square in the eye, and I said, I don't advertise any fly-by-night schemes, mister.
And he showed you testimonials from people he'd set up in business.
That's right, he did.
Maybe he even let you see his model machine in the truck?
Yes, sir, he did that, too.
So you printed his ad?
Yes, sir, I did. But even more than that, I ran a story in the news column about the fine opportunity this business offered to elderly people. Oh, I swallowed his yarn hook, line, and sinker. Well, then when the truth came out...
I imagine some of the townspeople were rather unfriendly.
No, sir, they weren't, because I ran another story saying what an all-fired numbskull I was, and I started a fund to help those people that lost their money. But if I ever see that man Benton again...
That's what we're coming around to, Mr. Giles. Have you any idea where he was headed?
No, sir, I haven't. He said he was going to his home office after he finished here in town.
Home office?
Yes, in Pennsylvania.
Did he tell you he had an office in Pennsylvania?
It's on his letterhead.
We haven't seen one of his letterheads, Mr. Giles. Do you happen to have one?
I sure do. That's what he printed his ad on. You want it?
Yes, we might be able to use it.
Okay, here it is. The Hot Spot Vending Machine Company, Freeburg, Pennsylvania. You can't go wrong with the Hot Spot.
We sent Benton's letterhead to our lab for analysis in an attempt to trace the paper. The fact that he and Warner now had a letterhead indicated that they might be working their swindle on a larger scale than before. Such, unfortunately, proved to be the case.
So we take this Wilkins for a couple of grand, the guy with the chickens for maybe $1,100, $1,200, then if we get that old coot that owns the rooming house... Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you listening?
Yeah, sure, I'm listening.
Okay. Now, why don't you close these deals and we'll blow, huh?
Oh, all right, Sam, I will.
Harry, for the love of Mike, what's eating you now?
Nothing.
Maybe you'd like to stay here in this peaceful little village. Is
Sam.
That it? Maybe you'd like to put down roots, Harry.
Sam, did I ever
yes,
say...
Yes, yes, you did. Last night, after you were going down under that fifth martini.
Oh, I couldn't have said...
Roots. Roots. That's just what you said. You wanted to put down roots.
Oh, that's pretty bad, isn't it?
That's bad. How about a little cottage with daffodils near the door?
I never saw a daffodil in my life. How could I say something like that? Anyway, it was three martinis. I never have more.
Five, and you were potted. Now, look, Harry.
Sam, I give you my word. I'll close the deals right away. What's Wilkins' number on that paper there?
2141.
2141, okay. Yeah.
You going to close him first?
Uh-huh.
Is he the one that wanted to buy the model I was showing?
Yeah.
Yeah, the grocery clerk?
The grocery associate.
He sure is right, huh?
Hello, Miss Wilkins. This is Harry Benton. I wondered if you were busy tonight, Mr. Wilkins. I've got a couple of ideas I thought we might talk over.
The paper used for Benton's letterhead was traced to a dealer in Chicago. Then we had to track down a list of printers who had bought this particular stock. While we were doing this, Benton and Warner were quite busy in the town of Lakeville, Indiana.
And I think I've put one machine out at that boathouse on the lake. What do you think, Hattie?
Well...
Of course, now if I had five machines...
Albert, even four is an awful lot.
An awful lot? Listen, someday I may have 20. I could be the vending machine king of Lakeville County.
Where are you going to get the money for the four machines? You told Mr. Benton you'd have it by the end of the week.
Well, we've got a good house, and if I tell the bank I want to make some repairs...
Oh, but you couldn't do that.
Hattie, I'm not going to be in groceries the rest of my life. I've got to break away sometime, and this is the time.
All right, Albert.
$2,800 isn't all the money in the world, you know.
It is when we haven't got it.
Hattie, it's time for both of us to start thinking big instead of thinking little. How are we ever going to get out of this rut if we don't?
What rut, Albert?
What rut? What? Well, this rut, the one we're in.
Oh.
Same thing, day in, day out. We're not living.
We're not?
No, we're not. Opportunity only knocks once, Hattie, once in a whole lifetime.
I was going to say...
And when it knocks, you've got to open the door because there's no second chance. They, what were you going to say?
I was going to say...
Yes?
I've forgotten, Albert. I guess it wasn't very important.
We finally located the man who had printed Benton's letterhead, and he remembered Benton and Warner very well.
You bet I do, the both of them. $28 worth of letterhead, $62 worth of folders telling how this vending machine makes money. all of this, and then they leave me with a bum check. And in case you're interested, the one that drives the truck isn't named Warner. His name is Wilson.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. When they gave me the check, I was kind of leery, so I said, either one of you guys got a driver's license or any identification, and this Wilson, he showed me his license.
What state was it, Mr. Davis?
Illinois.
Do you happen to remember the address on the license?
No, I gave the whole thing to the skip tracer that collects bills for me, but I haven't heard anything from him.
May we have his name, please?
Sure, it's the Merchants Collection Service. They're in the phone book.
You have no idea where Benton was headed, have you, Mr. Davis?
No. All I know is he was headed away from paying my bill, as far away as possible.
When we talked to the bill collector, who was also trying to find Benton and Warner, we got the number of Warner's operator's license. He gave us his home address, a cheap rooming house in Chicago. This place received and forwarded letters for him. The owner of the rooming house was a former con man named Hafey, who kept his place as a retreat for the boys in the swindling business.
Yeah, and then where do you end up, Sam? In Hafey's rooming house with all the other old punks, gabbing about the last big deal you're going to pull before you quit the racket. We're going to play cards, so you're going to talk.
I'd like to talk, Sam.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Now, don't get sore.
Who's sore? We're only going to close four deals for practically $10,000, and you're talking about walking out on
them. Sam, I told you I'm not walking out. I'll close the deals, but after
how
that...
How could you do something legitimate? You'd end up cheating yourself just to keep in practice.
Thank you, Sam.
You would, I guarantee. What could you do legitimate? One thing, just so...
Well, it may surprise you, Sam, but I could establish a little business with the vending machines.
Vending machines?
Yeah, in a small town like this.
Vending machines?
Well, doesn't it ever occur to you, Sam, that there are machines that do actually vend merchandise such as cigarettes and soft drinks?
Vending machines?
Sam. Oh, I see we've come to a conversational dead end.
You mean you'd set up vending machines?
Yes, I do.
You're out of your mind. Who could make a living on those
things? I refer you to the pamphlet, A Business of Your Own, that we gave the suckers.
Well, you wrote that malarkey yourself.
It isn't necessarily
malarkey. Well, if it isn't malarkey, how could you write?
Oh, Sam, in a moment you're going to irritate
me. I ought to irritate you with a good clout and a puss, only you're too old.
Well, where are you going?
I'm going out for a beer so I can sit someplace and think over what a no good you turned out to be.
Just because I want to settle down and have a little business of my own, a retirement plan?
The only retirement plan you'll ever get is a 10-year stretch in the lockup.
Oh, Sam... I forgive you.
Anything that happens to you from this minute on, you deserve it.
After several days of persuasion in which the rooming housekeeper, Hafey, was convinced that the better part of valor was revelation, we learned that Warner's last known address was a small hotel in the town of Oakdale, Indiana. He was there, Hafey said, with his partner, Harry Benton.
So, Mr. Benton said I should bring you to contracts. He said you always come home for lunch, so... I figured this was a good time to catch it. See? Now, you just sign all three copies, Mr. Wilkins, here and here, where I've marked it.
Have you got a pen?
A pen? Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, one more thing. Mr. Benton said you was going to get a certified check.
That's right.
Yeah, well, look, I don't want to rush you, but there's kind of a backlog on machines right now if you want to get your name on a preferred list.
I could give you the check before I go back to the store.
You could? Oh, well, that would certainly expedite matters, Mr. Wilkins.
We could go to my bank right now.
Oh, that's a very good idea.
Don't you want me to sign the contract?
The contract. Yeah, here and here and here.
Maybe I'd better read them first, huh?
Read them?
It's always good business practice.
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead, read. But, you know, there's a lot of words there, and if you've got to get back to the store...
I don't think anybody should sign a contract they haven't read, Mr. Warner.
Well, yeah, you're 100% right.
And now, where did I put my reading glasses?
Oh, I'll read it for you.
No. I think I'd better... Happy! Trouble is, I sometimes don't wear my normal glasses, and then I can't find my reading glasses. Now, Happy, where did you... Oh, yes, here they are. And never mind, Hattie, I found them.
Mr. Wilkins.
Now, we've got time, Mr. Warner. I get a full hour for lunch. Now, let's see what we've got here. Purchase agreement, Hotspot Vending Machine Incorporated, and Albert Humphrey Wilkins. You know something, Mr. Warner? I think this is going to be a real turning point in my life. I just got a feeling.
Yes, ma'am, that's the only way we can put it. A real turning point.
Oh, I'd like to settle in a quiet little town, just like this. Spend my time drinking iced tea.
Albert says Oakdale is dead. It hasn't got any future.
You know something, Ms. Wilson? That's just what I want. A place with no future.
Albert wants to get out someday when the machines are paying, says.
Well, when a man has a business of his own, anything is possible.
That's just what Albert said after lunch when he signed the contract.
Yes, I... When he what?
When he signed the contract. Mr. Warner said...
Mr. Warner was here?
Yes, about noontime. They both went over to the bank before Albert went back to the store.
The bank? Mr. Wilkins' bank?
Albert is drawing a certified check.
Why, that big double-crossing, two-time crook.
Mr. Benson.
Oh, I didn't mean your husband, Mrs. Wilkins. I meant, where's your phone? Will you call your husband right away? No, never mind, Slate. No, I could murder him. He didn't trust me to close the deals. I'll better plug Nickel at that...
Mr. Benton, I'm sure you meant no offense, but I think you better explain yourself.
Oh, I will. I'm a sucker, Mrs. Wilkins, a trusting, gullible...
In the parlor, Albert, Mr. Benton is here.
Oh, Mr. Benton is here. Well, good.
Mr. Wilkins, did you give my partner a check?
Ixnay, Harry, shut the trap. Clam up, Harry's FBI.
FBI.
You're under arrest, Benton.
Albert, what happened?
There were a couple of crooks, Harry. Both of them.
No, Mr. Wilkins. Only one of us is a crook, and I'm glad he didn't get away with it.
Harry, clam up, I'm telling you.
Okay, Benton, come along. Mr. Wilkins, can you come with us now?
Albert, I'll be there in a minute, Mr. Reynolds.
Okay, we'll wait in the car. Come along, boys.
Oh, Sam, you're a great disappointment to me. Mrs. Wilkins, I'll be back someday. Take care of your husband.
Albert.
Well, what happened was this, Harry. Hello. Oh, yes, Mr. Griscom. Yes, sir, I know it's 1:30. Yes, sir, I know I'm late, but you see what happened was that I... Hello? Hello? Oh, Hattie, I better get down to the store fast and see Mr. Griscom. He's sore as a boil. I'll talk to you later.
Albert,
I'm back to run, Hattie. You know Mr. Griscom.
Caught red-handed, Benton and Warner offered no defense to several charges of fraud. Each was sentenced to a 3-year term in prison. Although Benton didn't have this in mind, he's of his enforced retirement plan. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Louis Pelletier. This is Dick Noel inviting you to listen to next week's story, The Snapshot. The FBI in Peace and War has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
The FBI in Peace and War, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 21st of September, 1958, on CBS. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. And that program in particular, though heavier on the drama than the procedural, had a very robust radio run beginning in November of 1944 and wrapping up a week after the broadcast we just heard, on September 28, 1958. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Whistler with the story, The Clayton Affair, a CBS broadcast from April 29th, 1951.
And now stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who's guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In The Whistler. Thank you.
am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler, rated by Independent Research, the most popular West Coast program in radio history. And now, The Whistler's strange story. The Clayton Affair.
The day, gray and overcast, matched the mood of the scene on the hill. The old cemetery, high up over the scene, a swirling mist moving in and out among those gathered for the services. The last rites. Last respects to be paid by the little crowd of townsfolk who had known and loved Jeff Clayton, killed in the prime of life. The remnants of Jeff Clayton's family were there, too. Mother Clayton, Jim, Jeff's older brother, Lenny, the youngest brother, cousin Freddie, and, of course, Jeff's attractive young widow, Ardith Clayton. She seemed least able to bear up under the ordeal, even was supported by the menfolk until the services were over and they were all back at the house. The stately old Clayton mansion on the hill. Only then could Ardith begin to control her grief.
Oh, cut it out, Ardith. It's over. It's all over. He's gone. My brother's gone.
Your brother? He was my husband, Jim. I loved him so much.
Sure, sure they loved each other.
Len is right. At least half right. I'm sure Jeff loved Ardith.
Oh, please.
Freddy, it's no use. Stop it. All of you. He's dead. Murdered.
Oh, Mother Clayton, please talk to them. They're acting as if it were my fault.
No one said that, child.
No, nobody said it.
I'm sorry, Lenny. Jim, Freddie, Mother Clayton. It must be the strain. The funeral. If you don't mind, I'm going upstairs to bed.
We don't mind.
No, no, we don't mind.
Good. Good night, then.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Ardith.
It's a strain, isn't it, Ardith? The day, the funeral, as you said. But most of all, the Clayton family. They act oddly, as if aligned against you somehow. And you have the feeling of a caged animal. You want out. You want to be free of the house somehow. And that's why you slip out of your upstairs room, down to the garage. A drive in the car would quiet your nerves, wouldn't it?
Freddy.
Yes. Yes. Cousin Freddy. Too bad, my dear. My dear Ardith. Car won't start, huh?
You heard. You know it won't.
I'm sorry. No mechanic, however. Suppose your obvious intention of going for a spin is spoiled. Lenny has the other car.
It was all right yesterday afternoon.
As I say, my girl, no mechanic. I.
Well, someone's tampered with it. They don't want me to go out. They're afraid I won't come back. You. Oh, no mechanic, indeed. There's grease on your hand. You tampered with this car, Freddy.
Really? You're observant, Ardith. Most observant. But I did nothing. As I say...
I heard you. No mechanic. All right, Freddy, have it your way.
Good night, Ardith.
It's a strange, nerve-wracking experience, isn't it, Ardith? The happenings here at Clayton House. You've never liked or understood this odd, close-knit family group. You return to the house, go to your room. A few minutes later, you hear footsteps. Footsteps along the upper hall. And then the turn of the key in a lock. Your lock, Ardith. You rush to the door. Try it. Step back, terrified with the realization.
Locked in. I'm locked in.
You wait, nervously wondering and waiting. And then, unable to stand it any longer, you ring for the maid. Then more waiting, pacing, until at last...
Yes, Mrs. Clayton?
Oh, you did come. They left the key in the lock?
Yes, ma'am, but I don't understand.
Here, do you understand this?
Money, but...
Don't tell anyone. After a while, I want you to unlock that door and help me get out of this house.
But why, Mrs. Clayton? What's the matter? I don't understand.
You don't have to. It doesn't matter. Just remember to come up here sometime after midnight. And don't let anyone see you.
Yes, ma'am.
You sink into a chair as the maid goes out, locking the door. The waiting is terrifying, isn't it, Artis? But the knowledge that you have someone on your side now, that you've bought some help, a chance for escape, very reassuring. Finally, much later, you see the latch on the door turning. She's back, isn't she? And you rise quickly and throw a coat over your shoulder. And then...
Going somewhere, Ryder?
Jim Clayton.
Uh-huh. Jeff's big brother. His keeper, if you like.
What is it? What's going on around this terrible house?
I think it's kind of nice here, Ryder. Always liked the old family homestead.
You've kept me locked in my room. Why, Jim, why?
Sit down, Ardeth. I don't like excitable women.
Tell me the truth, Jim. Why are you doing this to me?
I said sit down. That's better. Cigarette?
No.
Then you don't mind if... Ardeth, your husband, my brother, Jeff... He didn't just die by accident, you know.
We've been over all that with the police.
Yes, sure. Like they said, he was murdered.
I know what the police said. And I know I'm being held captive here in this house, and I want to know why.
I'm trying to tell you. This man who killed Jeff was shot and killed by the police, or were you so busy being the grieving widow you haven't heard the details?
You know I loved your brother.
Do I? Well, let's say I thought you did, once. Only we've been looking into the background of this fellow, Joe Hansen, who killed Jeff. Seems that he had a girlfriend, Artis.
So?
So she was seen with him quite frequently. She shouldn't have been because she was a married woman.
Go on.
We Claytons have the idea Hansen's girlfriend was married to Jeff.
What are you saying?
I thought it sounded pretty clear. Do you want that cigarette now?
What are you saying, Jim?
That you did it, Artis. Because you were in love with this fellow, Hansen, and Jeff wouldn't divorce you. You killed Jeff Clayton and had him killed in the same cold, matter-of-fact way you'd step on a bug.
If you're so sure of that, why don't you tell the police?
Because we're not quite sure. When we are, we'll decide what to do with you, Artis. If you're innocent, all right, but if you're guilty...
How will you know, Jim? How can you possibly know? You can't keep me here, terrify me into saying things that aren't true.
It won't be necessary. Not at all. You see, the fellow that saw you and the boyfriend together so many times, he's on his way here.
I don't understand.
You will, when he identifies you as Hansen's girlfriend.
Oh?
Yes. Oh. Well, sweet dreams, Artis. Mr. Fletcher will be here tomorrow. Good night. This time I'll take your door key with me.
Now, back to the Whistler.
It's a dread, sleepless night for you, isn't it, Artis?
Yes.
Because you know what will happen the moment that witness arrives. Names you as the woman so often seen with your husband's killer. But there's nothing you can do now. Nothing the following morning as Jim opens the door to your room, ushers you downstairs to join the rest of the Claytons in the massive library. They sit around like a silent jury. And then you become conscious of a frightening sound. Something just outside the library window. Someone's digging out there, Artis.
A grave, perhaps? And you wonder if it's to be your grave. And then the digging stops. Shortly after that, Cousin Freddy comes into the room.
Well, that's done. Oh, Otis. You should have kept me company out there. None of the others are interested in gardening.
Gardening?
Preparing a bed for my new bulb, the gladiolus.
Oh.
You're all terribly quiet.
We're waiting for Mr. Fletcher, Freddy.
Fletcher? Oh, yes. The one who's to tell us all. Otis, I do hope he's mistaken. I've always had the...
Is that you, Lenny?
Yes. I brought Mr. Fletcher.
We're in the library.
Fletcher? Fletcher, I don't know any Mr. Fletcher.
Hold it. The important thing is, does he know you? Oh, how do you do, Mr. Fletcher?
How do you do?
Well, Mr. Fletcher?
No. No, this isn't the girl. I'd know her anywhere, and this isn't the girl.
Oh. Jim, she's fainted.
I'll get her, Lenny.
No, leave her alone. Poor thing. The poor, frightened thing.
It's over, isn't it, Artis? And you know it even as you sink down on the chaise long and a half faint. You can hear them talking around you, hear them ushering Mr. Fletcher out. A man who could have sealed your death warrant with a few words, but he didn't recognize you. Now you'll be able to get away, go somewhere where they'll never find you. Even if they do someday learn the truth about Jeff's death. You rest for about an hour and then go to the garden for a little fresh air. Jim steps up to you.
Artis, I'm sorry. I guess we gave you a rough time.
I know how you must have felt about your brother, but... Well, the part I can't excuse is the fiendishness of all of you. The kind of a family you are.
Yes, I know. But you see, we're a close-knit family, Artis. We were just trying to make you break down and confess. But if you had, we wouldn't have taken the law into our own hands. We'd have turned you over to the police.
You never liked me, any of you. Well, you might as well know I've despised you, too. The very name Clayton is something I'm anxious to forget. Now, leave me alone.
All right.
You look after him, smiling to yourself. Strange, isn't it, Artis? How it's all changed. How you can say anything now and be excused rather than accused. You turn as Jim enters the house and stroll along the gravel path leading down toward the boathouse. You've got to think this out carefully now, don't you? And quickly, too. Decide exactly where to go so they can never find you. And you must get started soon, while the Claytons still believe you innocent.
Artis? Artis?
What? Oh, Lenny. Oh.
Jim said I'd probably find you down here by the seawall.
I thought you'd gone to the village with your friend, Mr. Fletcher.
I did. Now I'm back, and I want to talk to you.
Well, if you've come to apologize...
No, I just wanted to chat about Mr. Fletcher.
What about him?
Well, as you know, I met him at the bus stop this morning.
Yes, you drove him out to the house and he failed to recognize me. I know all that.
No, but Mr. Fletcher did recognize you, Artis.
What?
Yes, I showed him a photograph. He identified you as Hansen's girlfriend.
Why, that's ridiculous.
He was quite positive.
But at the house a little while ago, he said...
Oh, him? That wasn't Mr. Fletcher.
What?
Well, not the real Mr. Fletcher. The man you saw was a chap I paid to pose as Mr. Fletcher. I told him it was a sort of a joke.
Oh, I see.
I thought it best to keep the real Mr. Fletcher undercover for your sake.
That was very thoughtful of you, Lenny. But you needn't have bothered.
You going to tell me he was mistaken?
Of course.
I don't think so. This photograph is a very good likeness of you, Artis. Here, leave for yourself.
Where'd you get this snapshot?
Oh, I've been carrying it around in my wallet. It was taken about 6 months ago.
Listen to me, Lenny. This man Fletcher is wrong. He's mistaken me for someone else. I tell you, I didn't know this man, Hansen. I had nothing to do with Jeff's death.
Okay, I don't care one way or the other.
What?
I'm not sorry Jeff's dead. Not sorry at all. There were times when I think I could have killed him myself.
Well, I knew you didn't get along, but...
Get along? I hated him.
Why, Lenny?
Because I fell in love with you, and and you belong to him.
Is that why you did this? About Mr. Fletcher, I mean?
That's why.
He's mistaken about me, you know. I swear.
Okay, so he's mistaken. I told you I don't care one way or the other.
You do believe me, don't you?
Sure, Artis. I believe you.
But the rest of the Claytons won't. They'd rather take his word than mine. And if the real Fletcher should happen to talk to them...
Oh, don't worry about him. He won't talk to anyone. Cash settlement works wonders.
Are you sure?
Positive. I've made all the arrangements. Jim tells me he's going to leave us.
Yes, yes, that's right. Thought I'd visit some friends in San Francisco and perhaps Honolulu. I just want to get away, forget.
Sure. You know, I've been thinking of getting away from here myself. Go abroad, travel. Be sort of fun if we could do it together, don't you think?
Yes, it would.
I'm not such bad company, really.
Well, of course you're not. Why are you going in the boathouse?
Oh, we can talk better in here. Come on. You're safe with me.
I'm sure I am, Lenny.
You do like me, don't you, Artis?
You know I do.
Enough to marry me?
Marry you, Lenny?
Yeah, someday soon.
Well, I'd like some time to think about it. After all, you're 5 years younger than I am.
Oh, so what? That's happened before. But I understand you're wanting to think about it.
Why don't you come down to San Francisco in a few days? We could meet there, talk it over.
Let me go with you now, Artis.
No, Lenny. I'd rather you didn't. I want time to think.
But, Artis...
We'll meet Friday. That's only day after tomorrow. Well?
No, Artis. I'm as tired of this place as you are. I want to go with you. You're leaving today, aren't you?
Yes, but...
I'm going with you. Oh, you don't have to decide about marrying me right away, but...
Lenny, listen to me a minute.
I've got an important appointment in town at 4 o'clock, Artis. But I'll be back in a couple of hours. This 4 o'clock appointment won't take long. I've already packed my traveling bag.
Please, Lenny.
You'd better do it my way, Artis. It's safer.
All right, Lenny. I guess it is.
There isn't room in your plans for Lenny, is there, Artis? And you realize you've got to move quickly. Get him out of the way now. All you need is a few hours' head start. As he turns, starts for the door, your eyes fall on the open tool chest nearby. In a split second, you reach down, pick up a hammer, and impulsively throw it at him.
Lenny!
He's dead, isn't he, Artis?
Yes.
In a moment of blind panic, you've killed him. You stand there staring down at him, unable to move or to think clearly. Finally, you take the key to the boathouse from Lenny's pocket, then manage to reach the door. You step outside and lock the boathouse door behind you. Put Lenny's key in your purse.
I've got to get away!
Back at the house in your room, you pack your things quickly, stopping occasionally to glance out the window toward the boathouse several hundred yards away. You're certain no one will go near there the rest of the day, and there's a good chance a couple of days may go by before the body is discovered. You've decided to hide for a few weeks at the home of a girlfriend in Mexico. All you need is a few hours' start.
Yes?
Jim, may I see you a minute?
Come in.
Well, so you're really going, huh?
I thought I made that quite clear to you before.
Well, yes, but I...
You wondered if perhaps I might have changed my mind? No. No chance of that. Well, what do you want to see me about?
It's Mother. She'd like to talk with you.
More apologies?
Well, if you'll just look in on her right
now. Later, if I feel like it. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to finish my packing.
All right. You want me to drive you to the station?
Well, if it wouldn't be too much trouble, I'd like you to drive me over to Milldale. I can catch a train there for Seattle.
Sure, sure. Just as soon as Freddy comes back with a car, he's still in the village.
Well, the convertible's out front. Why can't you take that?
Well, Lenny's got the keys, and I don't know where he is.
Oh.
The last time I saw him, he was with you, walking along the seawall.
Yes, but that was quite some time
ago. I could hunt him up if you want. He might be at the boathouse, fooling with engines.
Oh, no, no, don't bother. I'll wait till Freddy comes back.
A sudden thought occurred to you, didn't it, Artie? And it helps to calm you. Yes, there are only two keys to the boathouse. One of them belongs to Lenny. His key is in your purse. The other key is in Jim's possession, and he's going to drive you to Milldale. Now you're almost certain of a 24-hour start before Lenny is found. As you wait, you become more and more confident that you'll get away safely. Finally, you hear the big car stop in front of the house. You pick up your suitcase and hurry downstairs.
Can I help with the rest of the luggage, Artis?
No, I'm taking this one suitcase with me. I'll send for the rest of my things later.
All right. Did you stop in and see Mother?
No.
But, Artis,
I'd rather not.
Okay.
You say goodbye to her for me. And to Carla, of course.
Sure.
And give a big kiss to Cousin Freddy, huh?
Oh, yes. By all means.
Leaving us, are you?
You think you'll be able to bear up under it?
Well, it's a shattering blow, but I imagine I'll recover.
Give me the car keys, Freddy. I'm driving Artis to the train.
Well, I'd be glad to oblige.
If you don't mind, I'd rather Jim drove.
What's the matter, Artis? Afraid I'd practice more of my psychological warfare?
Freddy.
Sorry, Jim. Here are the keys. And bon voyage to you, Artis. Do drop us a postcard sometime, hmm?
Oh, of course. Are you ready, Jim?
All right, let's go.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. And now back to the Whistler.
You look around for the last time, Artie. Clayton Hall, and now you're about to leave. In another half hour, you'll be aboard the train headed north. But your plan calls for you to get off that train, take a plane headed south. Yes, when Lenny's body is found, they'll be looking for you in Seattle. But you'll be safely across the border into Mexico. Now, as you step forward, and Jim is about to open the front door.
Oh.
Well, I wonder who this is. Yes?
Is this the Clayton residence?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I'm looking for a Mr. Lenny Clayton.
Well, he isn't here at the moment. I'm his brother. Is there anything I can...
Possibly. I was asked to come here to identify a woman. Your brother met me at the bus station, showed me a picture of this lady right here.
No.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
My name's Fletcher. Amos Fletcher.
Fletcher? Just a minute, Artis.
Let me go.
Not till I get to the bottom of this. Look, Mr. Fletcher, you say my brother showed you a photograph of this woman here?
Yeah, I recognized her right away. She was Joe Hansen's girlfriend.
That's not true.
Please, lady, I've served the two of you drinks often.
Go on, Fletcher.
Well, when I told your brother this lady was Hansen's girlfriend, he thanked me and told me he'd bring me $1,000 this afternoon. We made an appointment in town for 4 o'clock.
Lenny's 4 o'clock appointment was to pay you?
Yes. I waited for half an hour, and when your brother didn't show, I came out here.
I see. Well, you'll get your money, Mr. Fletcher. I'll have it for you tomorrow. Now, you're certain this lady was a friend of Hanson's?
Of course. He used to bring her to my cafe 2 or 3 times a week.
All right, suppose I did know Joe Hansen. That doesn't prove I killed Jeff.
No, it doesn't. But I think it will be more than enough to justify the police detaining you for further investigation.
I think I'll be running along now, Mr. Clayton. I hope you don't mind my barging out to your house like this. If your brother had kept his appointment...
That's quite all right. Lenny's pretty absent-minded. Probably forgot about it. Last time I saw him, he was walking toward the boathouse with Artis. Maybe he's still there.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 29th of April, 1951, on CBS. Closing the curtain on this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back.